Wow.
You know who this is?
Sounds like Bowie.
That it is. From Black Tie, White Noise.
Nice. Interesting. Nice pick. Welcome back, everybody. It's 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. I Feel Free's a cover.
Indeed it is.
Clapton?
Cream.
Cream, yeah. Okay. Yep. Clapton. Judges? Yes, we'll give you that one, Spike. You control the board. Yeah, how about Julio Rodriguez, Rookie of the Year? Major League Baseball's Rookie of the Year. I was amazed when Lisa brought the news that no Mariner has ever won that award before. Junior didn't win Major League Baseball's Rookie of the Year?
Really?
Maybe Junior was the American League Rookie of the Year? Maybe A-Rod was the American League's Rookie of the Year? I'll have to look into this. Texters will know. We got the vast unpaid research staff that is our texting audience. And that number is 888-973-5476. You folks out there can look that up while I'm trying to figure it out here at work. Boy, the Mariners, I don't know. So it's going to be a limp to the finish for the Mariners this year. 10 games to go, if I'm not mistaken. Magic number, I think, is down to 7. Mariners have a day off, a much-needed day off, before they finish with 10 at home. Thank goodness it's 10 at home. They're done with their last road trip of the year. They've lost 7 of their last 10. But the good news is they have still a 4-game lead over Baltimore for the third and final wild card spot. Boy, just oof, oof. You know, and it's weird. They've put Rodriguez on the 10-day DL with a lower back injury. And I'm wondering if they're, I mean, obviously, if he could play, he would play. You got to wonder, are they resting him up before a potential postseason run? Is that why they put him on a couple days ago? I mean, they probably put him on because he couldn't play. I mean, if you read it at face value, but did they decide that they have enough of a cushion in the West, in the wild card race, I should say, and enough of a cushion over a struggling Baltimore that they can manage to secure a wild card spot without Julio and have him back rather than try to push him through? And plus, as a rookie who just signed a deal worth, I don't know, $250 million almost, you know, an 8-to-14-year deal to keep him long-term in a Mariner uniform, you don't want to push the kid too far for one season, one postseason spot, and maybe risk an injury to a future of this team, a piece that will be counted on for years to come if the Mariners are going to be successful. Oh, by the way, Baltimore is winning tonight over Boston 9-5, so our magic number is not going to go down tonight. It will still be 7. But the M's, they can pull it off. You know, yesterday didn't help. A 9-run lead against a lousy Kansas City team. I don't know how anybody saw that coming. I mean, nobody, how do you, I heard that manager Scott Servais had a closed-door meeting with the team after yesterday's loss, as you should, blowing a nine-run lead in an 11-run six for the Royals, you know, when just the wheels came off. Kind of unbelievable, kind of impossible to believe. But the M's are still, you know, right now, if the season ended today, in the playoffs. So see how it goes, man. You know, again, a much needed day off for the Mariners. They'll begin their final home season, home stretch of the home stand of the year. 3 against Texas, 3 against Oakland, 4 against the Detroit Tigers. None of those teams have a winning record, but that hadn't seemed to matter for the last week. Tigers, one of the worst records in all of baseball. The M's just need a combination of 7 wins or Baltimore losses over the next 10 games. So we'll see how it goes. Oh. Matt, you're not married. You've never been married.
Not to my knowledge, no. Unless I was in an extremely altered state the entire experience and just missed out.
Ever woke up in Vegas?
I have not had the Katy Perry Vegas experience.
Still had both your kidneys, but there was a ring on your finger? That's a bad morning. Wow. An article was written about a marriage sabbatical and the benefits of spending time away from the person you've decided to spend the rest of your life with. And that a lot of couples take regularly scheduled breaks from each other. They say that absence makes the heart grow fonder. And according to this story, which is from Zoe Williams in The Guardian, and, you know, The Guardian's it's not the New York Times, but neither is the New York Times anymore.
The Guardian's kind of the New York Times of the UK.
Yeah.
Could be argued.
It's not a rag by any imagination. If you don't like what it says in a particular story, this isn't a political story, so that may help us find a nice median area to land the story into. Journalist Celia Walden recently wrote about taking a six-week marriage sabbatical, as in 6 weeks away from my husband and my marriage. In a post-COVID context, there are probably many couples who could do with a breather after we were locked into our lives with our partners and our families without the ability to go off to work or whatever for great amounts of time. It'd be nice to just be yourself and be by yourself and rediscover yourself and then bring your whole self again back to your relationship. My wife and I had a similar experience to what this author was referring to, a marriage sabbatical. Not by choice, by any imagination. We lost my father-in-law, my wife's dad. And she, as children who lose a parent do, was forced to be like the executor. And not forced, but, you know, she had to be away from home for, it was actually more than 6 weeks. Went down to his home in the Arizona, southwestern area, between Arizona and Albuquerque, New Mexico. And spent the better part of 8-9 weeks settling his estate, moving his belongings out of his home, and dealing with all the things that happens when you lose a parent. So my wife and I, who have been together for over 30 years, spent 8 weeks apart. And to be completely honest, it did us a world of good. We, of course, stayed in constant contact. We spoke, you know, probably numerous times a day. The advent of FaceTime has made it much easier than it would have been in the past to be disconnected from the person you've decided to spend your life with. The person you love, I'll say it, I'll put it out there. I love her. Why am I avoiding saying that?
Why didn't you warn me so I could get the breaking news sounder?
Yeah, what? Shut up. And you gotta, I wonder if there are couples out there who do this on a regular basis, who take maybe not a sabbatical from your marriage where you decide to live alone for 2, 4, 6 weeks. And it's not like you have left the fact that you're married behind. We certainly didn't do that with no intention of ever doing that.
We were on a break.
Thank you. One of the greatest storylines of all time, by the way. You know, it does a person good to remember who they are. It's funny, I've told both my daughters at various stages of their relationship histories, both of which are very, very new and very brief. You know, you have to remember when you're in a relationship who you are, because the reason that you are attractive to another person is because of what you've built over your life, who you've become, what your priorities are, what your character is. You know, what's important to you. And if you lose that, becoming a partner to somebody, becoming part of a relationship, if you change who you are to make someone else happy, you aren't the person that was attractive enough to become in a relationship to begin with. And you put everything at risk. And I've tried to keep that mentality and that guideline true for myself. And I try to tell my daughters that being who you are and maintaining who you are is important. So I guess from that perspective, if you're in a long-term relationship and you have been for a long time, whether it's a marriage or just a partnership – Because nowadays, you know, everything's, all the rules seems to have been softened. All the guidelines have been softened. You know, it used to be you had to be married if you were in a relationship, or at least that was, you know, when I was growing up, you know, decades and decades and decades ago, that was what you did. You know, when my wife and I got married, I didn't hesitate about whether or not I would marry, because I knew that this is the person that I wanted to spend my life with. And that's what you did. That's the norm I was raised under.
Same. And it set me up for so much false hope. You've no idea.
Really? How do you mind if I ask how you mean that? I mean, if you don't want to share, that's fine.
Totally. No, it's just that my parents had a beautiful marriage. They got along very well. They were very compatible, and it was just so sweet to see. So from a young age, I admired that. I was never one of these guys that like wanted to avoid responsibility or avoid commitment. So I saw what my parents had, and I always thought that that would be something that I would have one day.
Right.
And then I think over time, as societal attitudes shifted, and understandably so, it just got harder to find. So I think the bar was set pretty high for me, and so my personal life became a bit of a letdown.
Interesting. That is, yeah. You know, it's funny because I'm a child of a divorced couple, although my mom remarried when I was very young. I mean, you know, I think I was probably seven, maybe six, when my mom married for the second time. And my stepdad came into my life and created our family and raised my brother and I. So I'm not really, you know, I didn't have an unrealistic expectation of what marriage should be, you know?
I mean, I was very blessed in that it was a good home environment to grow up in, but I didn't realize just how much trauma and drama other people went through in relationships and how hard it was to find.
Yeah. I think that absence, a texter writes in, absence makes the heart grow wander. Boy, I don't know if, I hope that's not the case.
You know, I used to think things like this just sounded terrible, but as I've aged, I've come to the conclusion that sometimes I can be an awkward or hard person to live with. I can understand why somebody might not want to be around me virtually 24/7. So I can completely understand if they love me and they think I'm, you know, we're having a great relationship, but they're just like, hey, sometimes we need some time off. Like, cool. I've got hobbies. You know, I can understand maybe why some people would like that and still care deeply for each other. I don't think it's necessarily as bad as I would have if you'd asked me when I was 20. I've realized I'm an obnoxious, difficult person. So there's that.
Yeah. I think you're a fine individual that will make somebody a lovely wife one day. I really do.
Thank you so much.
You
betcha.
You. Sorry.
Put that on my profile.
That was a misogynistic, nasty ass thing to say, wasn't it?
I didn't notice. I just took it as a compliment.
Attaboy. There's another one. No, you know, it's funny. You really, when you become part of a team, a partnership, a marriage, whatever, however you want to, you know, classify, designate, restrict your relationship, establish ground rules. You know, it's important to maintain your individuality. I think that's the whole point of this story in general, and what I bring, what I get from it, what I hope to convey to the audience.
And think of it too, because like if you have differences with your partner or spouse about like how you maintain your space or whatever, you know, neatness, certain things, decorative arguments, things of that nature. I can kind of see where having separate spaces or maybe even semi-separated residences could work for some couples. I'm not saying it's mainstream. I'm not saying it's all, but I could see it working for some people because you have your own space and then you have what you have with each other and you get together and you get to miss each other a little bit. That's not a bad thing.
Not at all. You learn to appreciate what first drew you to your partner, your wife, husband, whatever it may be. When they're not around. And the little things that bug you from day to day, and they do come up. Don't kid yourself. No one I know who has been in a relationship long term, whether it's a marriage or just a partnership or whatever. Every day is not the honeymooners. Well, maybe it's more like the honeymooners than the honeymooners.
I was going to say, yeah. The Bickersons.
Yeah.
Really go way back.
They really are going back. The Flintstones for you younger kids. Flintstones for younger kids? Oh, my God. Maybe even a vitamin. You know, you have moments in every relationship that are difficult, that are challenging, if not difficult, sometimes flat out difficult. sometimes that are, you know, teetering on breaking points. But, you know, divorce rates climb because people stopped working it out. People stopped hanging in there. People have such a lower tolerance for putting up with difficult times than they used to. We've become such a disposable culture, living disposable lives. When something doesn't work, we just abandon it and go on to something else. And sometimes, don't get me wrong, it's the right thing to do.
Right.
In a relationship that is not working, in a relationship that is unhealthy.
But other times,
or toxic.
Other times it's gotten to be where we treat people like, you know, swipe right, swipe left. And we always think in the internet age, it always feels like there's a better option out there somewhere. There's always a better song. There's always something better to watch. There's
always
a better
greener.
Person
yeah.
just one click away on a yeah. dating site or an app. See, I still talk about clicks like people use the regular computers anymore instead of using
right.
apps. But yeah, I mean, in some cases, you're right. You have to let it go. But in other cases, sometimes things have to be built. You have to grow with people. And that can make for some really good friendships and relationships.
Yeah, exactly. The difficult times are what makes the better times even more sweeter. Much like the Seahawks. I can't believe I'm going to do this. So maybe we should see some time away from the Seahawks.
Maybe.
A sabbatical.
So.
No, but, you know, how will you appreciate the good times if you haven't suffered? If you're in a relationship that has been, you know, hugs and roses since day one, and you've never had a major blow up, a major fight, you've never had any doubts about that relationship, first off, congratulations.
And it sets the bar too high for flawed human beings. I can't
yes.
expect anyone who's my partner to be perfect all the time, to be in a great mood all the time, to always approve or agree with me about what I'm doing or saying or thinking. It just sets the bar too high for both parties to expect that it's always going to work out.
That it's always going to be that way, yeah.
Click.
I agree completely. You can't. You just can't. That cannot be. That's not a realistic expectation to be maintained. It's just not.
You miss the person they used to be.
Yeah.
There's also that.
Well, yeah, exactly. That was the point I was trying to make earlier about being yourself, maintaining your individuality. What you brought to the deal in the first place. When you give that up to make someone else happy, it's a no-win proposition because you will no longer be the person that attracted them to you in the first place. So maybe a sabbatical for any relationship is a healthy thing.
And if they don't respect you for who you really are, then they don't really love you.
No, exactly. You know, every guy, I mean, of course, I'm not the person my wife met and fell in love with. I've hopefully, under her fine tutelage, improved.
Which is part of the growth process.
Part of the growth process.
You got to do it together.
Right, but essentially, I'm still the same guy. I just have been cleaned up a little. Refined a touch, I hope.
Matured, slightly.
Thank you. Well, yeah, grown up a little. Thanks.
Very slightly.
Yeah. if you're interested, the article is at theguardian.com, the six-week marriage sabbatical. By the way, the woman who wrote it was married to Piers Morgan. So you ask
boy,
yourself,
I want to read her book.
Yeah, well, yeah, she says, was 6 weeks enough to be away from that guy?
You know? Oh, Piers.
Yeah. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be right back, folks. Thanks for joining us. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It's 8:33. Lisa Brooks is going to hang just for a second. I want to ask you the story about the library.
Yeah.
And the old phone number, the Ask Librarian phone number, was abandoned by the library, if I hear the story correctly.
Yes.
Someone else can then pick up that number.
Yes.
And that person who now has that number is using the opportunity of folks calling the library for assistance to try to get credit card information from the people who call the number. Is that what I'm getting correct?
Yes, but also someone is apparently calling people from that number.
From that number, okay. Well, maybe I didn't watch enough detective shows in the 70s, but don't they know who bought that number? Don't they know who owns that number now? Isn't this a pretty easy case to crack? You don't have to be Columbo to get this one.
That's a good question, yeah.
I mean, if I know that you can buy a number when it's no longer in use. Doesn't the phone company know who has that number?
Well, is there? Who's the phone company anymore?
Well, ain't that the truth?
I think there are ways to track it down, but I'm not sure who has it.
It seems to me finding out who's got that number is probably the easiest part of this. Hmm. And that person is then calling folks and saying they are from that library, and that's what comes up when a caller ID would be. The library's Ask a Librarian number would be the one that comes up?
I would think so. I'm not sure from our story, because I didn't do the initial reporting on it, I'm not sure when that number was dropped.
And I don't want to ask you to try to speculate, because you guys do a phenomenal job of getting it right, and I appreciate that. Just when I heard the story that somebody who had the old number is now trying to scam people, I'm like, how hard is it to find out?
Maybe they're just
using it to gather evidence against this person. You know, that they can, you know, but I think.
Oh, you mean the sting? Somebody's doing a sting operation?
Or that they know who's, they know this person has the number and they're calling people and they're trying to gather evidence against them of them trying to fraud people, defraud people, and then so they can then prosecute them or lock them up or whatever it might be. I don't know either.
Probably ignore it for right now and don't give your credit card number.
Yeah, that's the important part of all this is that Cairo News is getting this information out there. To let people know that someone is preying on folks and don't be a victim.
That's cool. Right.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's what a crazy world. How can you go after folks? Come on. You know, it's funny, Matt, when times are tough, man, people will resort to doing criminal things. You know, it's like the criminals are always one step ahead of the cops.
Always Robin season.
It's It is always Robin season, isn't it? Yeah. With two B's. I read a story today, Matt, in the New York Times about bringing your whole self to work. And I was intrigued by the headline itself. It says, don't bring your whole self to work. And I'm kind of curious what they meant by that. It was in the New York Times. And my first thought was, is this part of the quiet quitting movement? You know, everybody's... quiet quitting, quiet scan, whatever. You know, God, it's either quit or do your job. First off, on the quiet quitting thing,
although but I don't think quiet quitting, as it's being described, even means that people aren't doing their job. They're just saying they're not going to go above and beyond without extra compensation.
No, and you're right. I totally misrepresented the quiet quitting movement. You're right. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, and we are all under the misconception that the harder we work, the more we'll be rewarded. The further our actions will take us up the food chain of employment, up the ladder of success. And when there are employees who will just take advantage of their workers, their employees, which is far too often the case, probably a majority of the time, that's the case. Folks have become aware of that, and they'll do what they're paid to do, and they'll not do more. And they won't work overtime without compensation. They won't step in and fill a boss's need to have a shift covered because it's going to help the boss. There's somebody on, I'm not sure if this is a TikTok or whatever. I think it's a TikTok. But this woman has a series of videos about setting parameters as an employee. You know, how to tell your boss that, you know what, that's, you know, I am not the solution to your poor planning as far as a workforce. I'm not the answer to your problems. I'll do my job. My phone will be off after 5 p.m. and I'll see you tomorrow. I wish I could remember her name. Anyway, if anybody knows it, Toodaloo is her sign off or something. It's a hokey little sign off, but this lady has a series of these videos and they come up on my phone. They keep sending me these videos on my phone. I try to go on social media and all of a sudden I'm wrapped up in a series of videos. Next thing you know, it's an hour later and I've lost an hour of my life. But the story about bringing your whole self to work, I read the story and what they were trying to say was, because of the pandemic, we have all evolved or devolved into who we are as employees. And I say all, and I'm misspeaking there as well, because many folks didn't have the ability to either stay home or work from home. A lot of folks were essential workers and had to tough it out during the pandemic. But those folks who were able to work from home for a good period of the pandemic, if not all of it, and now are being offered some type of hybrid work environment. Studies have shown that many of us don't want to go back full time. And given the fact that we've been productive and gotten through some of this difficult evolution of employment, what it means to be employed, what it means to be a worker in an office, it's now been realized that we can be trusted as a workforce to work from home, to be independent. We don't have to be governed over and watched over every day to do our jobs. There's, of course, exceptions to all these rules. But when folks come back to working in the office, the RTO, return to office, you know, and I've been through that environment before. A lot of places are still allowing folks to do what's comfortable for them, work from home when you can, when you need to. But it's given us this, we've become different people having worked from home. Our work life and our home life have kind of morphed into one new kind of employee. You know, we're used to having our family interrupt us during the workday when we work from home. We're used to, you know, sitting in front of a screen and, you know, dressing from the waist up, you know, the business from the waist up, pajama pants from the waist down moments. You know, we've all seen those jokes.
Who bothers with the pants?
Any kind of pants. I think better when I'm, yeah, you, anyway. So the article is written by Pamela Paul. It's in the New York Times. And it says, do not bring your whole self to work. And what she means by this, it's not about your effort. It's about your life outside of work. We've become these hybrid animals that are our personal lives and our personal struggles are part of how we do our job every day when we work from home. And when you come back to an office environment, it's probably best not to bring in all the elements of your life that you've dealt with while working from home into your professional arena to maintain a level of professionalism, of professional decorum. You know, and we all have employees that overshare about their private lives, and that can be detrimental not just to the proficiency and the productivity of the office. It might stop you from advancing your career. If you've become this hybrid person who deals with the teenager in your home or the toddler in your home or the whatever, the troubles that are part of your daily life when you worked from home, they're still part of your daily life's struggles and challenges. But bringing them in to work with you when you come back to an office in a fully engaged RTO, a return to office environment, a lot of folks don't want to hear about your personal issues. A lot of folks don't want to hear about your love life, your troubled boyfriend, your troubled girlfriend, whatever it might be. Your husband who wants a 6-week sabbatical from your marriage, whatever it might be. You know, bringing these things into your work environment are going to make you maybe not the best employee you could be. You know, maybe not the professional you need to be to advance your career. So the article about not bringing your whole self to work means bring just those parts of you that are pertinent to doing the job you're hired to do and doing it proficiently and excellently so you can move up the food chain and climb the ladder of opportunity. You know, realize that when you work from home and you've got your kids and your dog running around and you're in a messy kitchen while you do a Zoom call, you know, there's a level of unprofessionalism, a level of casualness that we've come to accept in our hybrid work world, our Zoom world. But as we return to a real office, I mean, and some of you may never have to work in a real office again. Well, we've evolved through this whole thing. But when you get back to work full time in the office, you got to strap on your professional guy, your professional lady, professional employee mindset. You can't bring that work-home hybrid to work with you. You can't bring the baggage from your personal life into your office if you expect to be your best and get the most out of your efforts and be compensated and accelerate your career up the ladder. You got to leave your whole self at home and bring your work self into work. There you go. It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Be right back after these. It's 8:48. Welcome back to Kyra Knights. Spike O'Neill, Matt Butler with you. So it was announced today that the Super Bowl, this year's Super Bowl, which will take place in Glendale, Arizona, which is now, I think, I don't know if it's State Farm Stadium now. It's not Phoenix University anymore. It's State Farm Stadium. Stadium sponsorships change so fast, man. I mean, we're Lumen now. We were Quest. We were CenturyLink. Now we're Lumen. I remember the days when stadiums were named after people important to the communities, and that went the way of the money. Husky Stadium is now Alaska Airlines Field at Husky Stadium. I think even over in Pullman, Martin Stadium is sponsored. I wish I knew the name. I apologize to you Cougar fans. Anyway, it's State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona on February 12th when the Super Bowl is played. It was announced today that the halftime show will feature Rihanna as the halftime performer at this year's Super Bowl. And I thought that was, you know, that's an interesting choice, a fine choice. I'm not a fan of Rihanna. I don't know if I could tell you maybe one or two or maybe three of her songs over the years.
I wasn't a huge fan until she covered Tame Impala. Then I was sold on that, at least. It was a really good cover.
Would you be surprised to learn how many records Rihanna has sold in her career?
Probably not. I know she's very popular.
Take a guess.
Records.
How many records has Rihanna sold in her career?
Half a million.
Like 500,000?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. No. Records.
Well, like physical records. Because
how do we even that's a good point. That's a fair point. How do we even measure anymore?
Streams.
Streams. Okay. How many streams?
Well, I can cheat and look at that.
Well, don't. But take a guess. The article I'm quoting here is from The Guardian, which I don't know why I keep finding Guardian stories.
Maybe because they're good.
They are good. 250 million record sales.
250 million?
Million record sales worldwide. One of the leading best-selling female artists in history.
See, I knew she had pop hits, but I wasn't expecting that much in sales.
Right. 250 million. I had no idea. So obviously I've missed the boat. And, you know, I got to tell you, last year's halftime show, which was, what, Snoop?
Snoop,
50
Dr.
Cent,
Dre,
Dr. Eminem. Dre.
Seems like there was somebody else.
Oh, Mary J. Blige,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Not my cup of tea by any way, shape, or form, but thoroughly enjoyable. I watched that last year and was genuinely impressed by Kendrick Lamar, Eminem.
Now, Kendrick Lamar, even if you're not a hip-hop fan, that guy is a talent.
Yep.
He's amazing.
I love that they told Snoop Dogg, who is, God, what an iconic character of a guy, regardless of his musical talents. He's a wonderful piece of work. I mean that with all respect and admiration I can muster. When they told him he couldn't bring his signature bandana because it's a gang affiliation kind of thing, his blue bandana, he wore a blue costume, a suit outfit that was like an entirely blue, everything was a blue bandana. The whole thing was made of blue bandana, it looked like. He was awesome. Anywho, not my cup of tea, but I enjoyed the show. So I think maybe I will also enjoy Rihanna's performance at Super Bowl. What year is this? I mean, by the way, I don't even know anymore.
It's the upcoming.
Is it 58?
Yeah.
I can't keep track. I was never at Roman numerals. I was interested to find out that Rihanna, according to the story in The Guardian, Rihanna was asked to do the 2019 Super Bowl and turned that down. That was, of course, headlined an incredibly memorable performance by Maroon 5. What? Yeah. Uh-huh. Not a fan. But she turned it down because that was the year that...
You know who else isn't a fan of Maroon 5 right now?
What's...
Adam Levine's wife.
Adam's wife. Yeah, good call. I heard that. Yeah, we can talk about that story maybe because I'm not sure what the hell's going on there. He's just a bag of dirt. Is that basically it?
Basically it.
Okay, so I'm glad we covered that with all the effort it was due.
This, by the way, is Rihanna covering psych pop band Tame Impala.
Okay.
The tune is called Same Old Mistakes. It's pretty trippy.
Rihanna said she wouldn't play the 2019 Super Bowl because of the protest by Colin Kaepernick. And what would that say about her if she sold out her community? When yeah. Kaepernick was giving up his entire career to make a point about violence, police violence, in rare occurrences, but far too often, excessive violence against the black community. So Kaepernick took a knee and cost his career. Rihanna said, I won't play the Super Bowl, but she'll be there this year.
And what a string of successes for Roc Nation and Jay-Z.
No kidding.
From that to this,
yeah.
Strength to strength with the Super Bowl.
I see a lot of folks who, not just texters to this show, but on social media. When you go to a stadium in the NFL, the music you hear is always thunderstruck or, you know, various rock and roll anthems. Rock anthems. So why are we having Super Bowl halftime shows that don't reflect that? And I would argue that we had decades of rock and roll icons. Decades.
And the demographics are shifting. R&B yes. and hip-hop and rhythmic yeah. music have at least pulled equal, if not in some cases overtaken,
right.
rock standards.
Absolutely. We've had the Stones. We've had Springsteen. We've had U2. You know, we've had Tom Petty. We've had lots of great rock and rollers play the Super Bowl halftime show. But we've also, we've had Katy Perry. We've had Madonna. We've had Janet Jackson and Timberlake. We had Timberlake twice. J-Lo and Shakira a couple years ago, right? I saw Bruno Mars in 2014 at our Super Bowl in New York. One of the most phenomenal shows I've ever seen. The kid was Bruno Mars is a phenomenal performer. And I bet Rihanna will give no less. The Weeknd, 2021, that was a...
Yeah, not many people were a big fan of that performance.
That was a weird day. I didn't get that one at all. But then again, you know, again, I'm not a Weeknd fan. Not the 2 day break from work. I mean, the artist. No big fan of the Weeknd.
I like the Weeknd when it's 3 days.
Yeah, sorry. Who doesn't? Number one all time, I think, Super Bowl halftime show, have to be Prince.
Indeed.
He absolutely slayed it. Absolutely slayed it.
It's a great show.
The late, great Prince. All right. It's Cairo Nights. 5 minutes to 9. We'll be right back after these, folks. We're glad you're with us.